the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
There's so much to get through in the week trending with Laura Byrne, Voices editor and podcast producer at thejournal.ie, and Untamás McDermott, managing director of the Communications Clinic. Laura, will you tell me please the details of what I thought was one of the most remarkable court cases of the week, which goes back to something I think a lot of people were familiar with from 2 years ago. The woman who went on a high-speed M50 chase, well, she was being chased by the Gardaí who were trying to stop her, and she actually live-streamed it as she was driving at high speeds with her phone out the window, live-streaming it for people to look at.
I know, it's hard to wrap your head around this, Matt. It's actually 2021 on the M50, and this woman who endangered the life of a Garda during this high-speed chase, when she, as you say, live-streamed it. She's been sentenced to 2 years for this. So Gemma Green is her name. She's 28 of Bunratty Road, Coolock in Dublin. She pleaded guilty to recklessly engaging in conduct in such a manner as to drive in the direction of a Garda who was out of his vehicle. So he wasn't in his vehicle.
He was trying to put out a stinger, wasn't it, to try and stop her car?
Yeah, which I suppose, you know, we've seen Garda under pressure in these instances before. You know, they're not advised to chase and they, you know, I suppose to disarm is really what they have to try and do. Now, he had to jump out of the way, forcing him to take evasive action. This is Junction 9 now, northbound on March 1st. Now, she also pleaded guilty to two counts of dangerous driving on the same date in the Coolock and Ballymun areas. And she has four previous convictions, two of which are for road traffic.
But her solicitor said that her behaviour was out of character.
Yeah, I mean, that's what solicitors do in court cases, I guess, you know. It was Judge Martin Nolan who passed sentence, and he said on the day in question, the defendant was driving, was instructed to stop her car by the Gardaí. She proceeded to drive away in the county of Dublin for 1 hour. So this is 1 hour this woman was...
But Untamás, what really grabbed me about this as well, this woman, Gemma Green, who's now 28, she has 2 years imprisonment, but she's been put off the road for 4 years. Is 4 years sufficient punishment, given that, you know, she could have killed the Garda, she could have killed anyone else if she had lost control of this car, and to be able to again drive in 4 years' time, driving licence is not necessarily a right. It's a responsibility to all the other road users and pedestrians.
Absolutely, and as we had heard, that she had had a number of other driving offences as well, Matt, so that the 4 years seems extraordinarily lenient, and one would have to wonder, would longer have been much more appropriate, or was it to have a lifetime ban, particularly considering that there was video evidence of the chaotic, given that she was videoing it herself, of the chaotic drive that she had. Also, it was outlined in court that cocaine was involved in the situation, which obviously didn't help matters. But 2 years in prison followed by, or along with, 4 years off the road seems significantly lenient, considering that she'll probably get out for good behaviour as well.
And we should remember, sorry Matt, 200 kilometres an hour is what they recorded her speeding at. You know, that is that, I can't wrap my head around that.
Of course, another significant road traffic offender is Conor McGregor. I think he has something like 18 convictions in relation to road traffic offences, and then there's also the punch with the man who was refused to take a whiskey off him in a pub, for which he was also convicted. And then in the United States he has the issue where he was throwing the trolley at a bus. How come, if the United States is so keen to deport violent criminals, and particularly exercised about protecting women, given what happens in the Nikita Hand case, how did Conor McGregor get into the United States, let alone get to the White House last Monday?
Well, this is the question, isn't it? And I suppose this, when we think about Conor McGregor in the White House, we can't just think about him and Trump. I think we have to think about him now under the umbrella of the entire MAGA movement, because this thing now is becoming bigger than one individual in Trump. And many people are asking that question. How is it that someone, you know, look, it's important to remember the High Court found him liable for the sexual assault of Nikita Hand. He was ordered to pay money towards her. I don't know. I mean, maybe is it a case that he's flying privately and he doesn't have to deal with immigration because he's...
Well, he went on a private jet, but yeah. I think even if you go on a private jet, you have to get clearance to go in. But clearly he had, because there's an excellent report by Conor Gallagher in the Irish Times online today on Tomás, saying that this apparently was agreed, this visit on Patrick's Day, and our Taoiseach didn't get Patrick's Day. He got the 12th of March. This was agreed when McGregor was one of the guests at the inauguration back in January and kept silent. But what does this tell us about the Trump administration, that they would pick Conor McGregor to be the representative of Ireland, even if the vast bulk of Irish people would not want that?
Yeah, and I think in relation to this situation, you know, the Irish race of Athlone and Kiro Gela, that what this really just tells us is that Conor McGregor is totally in line with the United States government and Donald Trump. What I think is more interesting, though, rather than McGregor himself being in the White House, is that he's a useful idiot for the propaganda machine that is the MAGA movement and Donald Trump. Because what we then began to see was his presence in the White House and the things he said about Ireland, that they were getting repeated on Irish media, but also international media, US media, British media, European media, which is again poisoning the well and creating culture war discussions that the MAGA movement would like. And we are seeing this occurring in Western liberal states. For example, Musk has come out recently, given out about Australia's social media policies. We saw Musk attempting to influence the German election with the AfD. We saw J.D. Vance making the speech in Munich. We saw Musk and Vance, or Musk in particular, talking about Muslim rape gangs and that being brought up in the UK Parliament.
And was it significant that we saw Musk in the photographs with McGregor and his family in the Oval Office?
Precisely. So we're now what we see, though, is again them using McGregor as a tool to poison the well. It is a version of Lord Ha-Ha broadcasting from Nazi Germany into Britain, where it again poisons the well of the discussion. So in this context, yes, it was very frustrating, I'm sure, for many Irish people to see McGregor there, but the actual thing is he is a useful idiot for the very effective propaganda machine of the MAGA movement.
Well, I agree with you, and most Irish people would agree that he's a useful idiot, but you should rule him out at your peril, because he says he's coming for the Oris. Now, there are many, and most of us...
Is he going to get a nomination? Gary Murphy explained the other day that you have to have at least 20 members of the Oireachtas to nominate you, or if you can't get that, and I think that would be difficult if you look at the makeup of the Dáil, four county councils and four council city or county councils. Again, I can't imagine any of the parties in any of those councils agreeing for, I mean, not just the government parties, but Sinn Féin, given what he has said about people from the north previously, will not be supporting him.
Yeah, we've been on crunching the numbers all week, wondering, and you know, there are one or two kind of disparate characters in Leinster House that would support him, but not enough to meet the 20.
Not 20.
Now, there's some small councils where there are people who might be inclined to lean towards him, but I can't see him getting four over the line. The thing is, he's a disruptor in the same way that Trump is a disruptor. Like or loathe them, and most of us are not happy about him. But I think the fact that he's campaigning on this immigration issue, the government would want to take great heed at that and just be very careful. I mean, I hope there's someone in government circles right now workshopping how to cope under Trump and how to cope with Conor McGregor.
Is there also a possibility, Owen, that we could see Musk now campaigning online to get a nomination for McGregor, that he'll say, oh, he can't get a nomination, this is an establishment stitch-up to stop him, rather than actually being the rules of the Constitution when it comes to getting a nomination for the presidency?
Really, at this stage, you could say we can't really rule anything out, and that, given that people probably won't read into the detail of the need for the 20 members or the four county councils, you would think that people would potentially buy into it. But you see, that's where I think we have to come back to. Conor McGregor is a vehicle to disrupt the democracy in Ireland, for example, and we're seeing versions of that happening. And that's where we then ask, well, what is the motivation? Why would they do this? Well, one of it is primacy for the United States, and that a weakened, distracted Europe is better than a clear, focused, united, motivated Europe, which is what we would hope it to be. And so this idea that, and that's what we think we need to really remember, that the propaganda that we are seeing is happening and is highly effective.
And it's divide and conquer. You're absolutely right, and that's why it's really important for anyone who has a platform in Ireland to be to be very open and honest about how they feel about him. You know, we had the head of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre write for us during the week. She has written to the American Embassy to complain, and it's really important that message from the Irish people is very cohesive.
The White House won't care.
They won't. They won't care a jot. But you know, we should care about who ends up in the Oris, and we have a right to decide who that is. And for what it's worth, we have a voice.
And you see, the upside is still for McGregor is the United States is still a very large market for him. He may not be seen as a deplorable here in Ireland, but he is very famous amongst the deplorables in the United States, particularly the MAGA supporting MMA watchers. And so the upside and benefit for him is he gets coverage, he gets attention, both in the UK as visiting the White House, which may whitewash him a little bit, across Europe and then across America. And that's the upside for him. The notion of him running for president may get a little bit of coverage, but isn't realistic in practical terms given the constitution. But there is a benefit for him in terms of money and attention as well.
A listener says he won't get the nomination and he'll spin that to say that he's been excluded from the democratic process.
But also, Matt, there was plenty of anti-immigration candidates that ran in the last election and none of them got elected.
Yeah, they didn't have quite a high profile, but let's hope.
But actually, did you see in that piece I mentioned by Conor Gallagher that's in the Irish Times today, he interviews Phil Sutcliffe, who is an independent councillor.
Who was in the Oval Office with him.
With him, yeah. And Phil Sutcliffe failed to get elected in the general election. He fell out with Independent Ireland. He actually said at the end of the piece that he expects Conor McGregor's campaign to get full support from both Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin. He also mentioned Putin as a good friend of Conor McGregor's, and I think we can remember a photograph from 2018 World Cup where Putin was hanging out with Conor McGregor. He hangs out with all the best people, doesn't he?
You see, nothing makes sense anymore. You have to, you know, you'd have sympathy for, let's say, Geraldine Byrne Nason, who was with Micheál Martin in the Oval Office there last week, and we were all analysing every inch of that. You know, did they work well? Did they smile enough? Did they plumose Trump enough? As you say earlier, Matt, none of that actually really matters anymore. The rule book has well and truly been torn up, so now we have to negotiate this whole new reality and try and make sense of it along the way and keep a cool head, I think.
Okay. Well, I talked about how he got into America. Why don't you tell me about the French, Laura, maybe the French scientist denied a US entry after he was discovered to have left phone messages critical of Trump?
Yeah, so, you know, when you talk about getting in and out of the US and US immigration, it really seems to be a case of, oh, come on and visit us. It doesn't matter what your background is, as long as you agree with us. And so this is France's French minister. The French science minister has said that a French researcher was denied entry and his phone searched going into the US for a conference because he had in the past shared his views, his anti-Trump views, with friends and family. Now, I thought that was curious because the copy in the piece doesn't say that he shared his views publicly. So it doesn't suggest that he was out on Twitter saying Trump this and the other, which would be neither here nor there. But how did they know that he was sharing this privately with colleagues and friends? So he was told he was brought in. He was literally going in for a conference and he was told he was sent home. Now, since then, the French Parliament has said it's asking, they're very critical of the Trump administration and how it's defunding research into very important issues. And it's advising scientists to come to France now instead to do research there.
Well, you see, I think that's a really interesting thing that Ireland and the rest of Europe should try and figure out, which is to start attracting academics out of America, because although the Trump administration are trying to drag business there, they're pushing thinking out there. And again, we see this back in 1939, Ireland invited Erwin Schrödinger and his cat to come live here. We saw it happening elsewhere across America. I think Ed Murrow welcomed more than 300 academics from Europe fleeing. Einstein is another example of them, where they leave places that are now inhospitable to thinking, open thinking, science. And what we're seeing is an attack on the education system in America, the attack on the Department of Education, an attack on the Ivy Leagues, and we should try and benefit from it.
And it would make you all the more nauseous then when you see the likes of J.D. Vance and Elon Musk going on about freedom of speech and clamping down on freedom of speech. So, you know, what they're saying is not necessarily what they're doing.
Okay, let's get a little bit happier for a while anyway. Tell us what the world's happiest country is, Laura.
There's been a lot of talk about this, Matt, all week, and we like to think we're pretty fairly happy-clappy in this country, but it's Finland. Now, it's been ranked as the world's happiest country for the 8th straight year, so they didn't just come in on a whim. It's the World Happiness Report. Locals and experts thinking that it's grand. They think it's down to Finland's strong welfare system and that boosts its mood. But they have a very good social structure. I mean, look, we always look to the Nordic countries for how they run things, how they deal with childcare, pay, social welfare. They always seem to have it sewn up. But the Finns are the, you know, Finland is the place to be.
So it's a combination of two things as well, that there's a self-assessment by the citizens, and then that's combined with GDP per capita, the social support, life expectancy, level of corruption. So you can imagine then at the other end of the list, you have places like Afghanistan, Sierra Leone, Lebanon, for example.
So it's all relative.
So it is totally all
relative. I thought the Finns were terrified of the Russians, besides.
Well, they are, and that's why they have a significant army of almost 800,000. And when you compare it to, and they have the same size
population. Oh, their population's the same as ours.
Yeah, no, they do. So they have a reserve of that they can ramp it up to 870,000 when they feel.
So that means nearly every adult male, is it?
Which I think if you compare it to Ireland, where they have the same population of us, it tells us that you can be small, rich, but also have the capacity to defend yourself. Now, they do have Russia right on their shoulder, but I know it does lead to another discussion, Matt, which I'm sure you've had many times on the show, which is as Ireland and our own capacity to defend ourselves.
I want to talk about happy things. But let's go back to the happiness thing.
I think there's a couple of interesting things, though, also within it. One is that they are relatively wealthy, and two is that they have a social welfare system that is seen to disperse that wealth pretty well. If you then compare that to America, that you see then coming up that America, as we know, is very wealthy, but in fact has a totally different view of the social contract to us and to Finland, and therefore, again, is a less happy place than we are.
And a lower life expectancy in the United States as well, about 4 years lower than the international average.
I think that's down to kind of unhealthy diets and sedentary lifestyles. They fell to 24th place, one position behind the UK.
Now, Where are we?
We are, Ireland 15th. Is 15th, so we're not so
up
bad.
Up two places. You know, and happier.
The government would like to think
you wouldn't
that we're
think it
right
for all
charity.
The text messages I'm getting coming in.
Well, we do like to give out, but maybe that's our coping mechanism. We're not quite sure. But one thing that stood out from this, Matt, was that the number of people dining alone in the United States has increased 53% in the past two decades. And the suggestion that they're maybe living more isolated lives, you know, and they do say, obviously, that loneliness is a factor in your happiness and your longevity and all of that.
Yeah, and that was one that jumped out to me as well, Laura. And Harvard did a longitudinal study into happiness, and what they found was a couple of things. The one was that you were happier if you had a partner that you had loved spending time with. Two, that you had a great circle of friends. Three, that you were active in your community. And four, had you stayed relatively healthy. That can be the secret for happiness, and I think you're seeing that in some of the findings of this report.
A listener says, I was in Lapland before Christmas. There's a big Air Force base beside it. You could hear the fighter jets overhead on a regular basis. Quite the juxtaposition, but I suppose they're flying missions to keep Santa safe every year as well, probably. Well,
someone's got to do it. Yeah. But I think head to Finland, find someone you love and have a great old time.
Okay, go to Germany for me and tell me about Germany's Tesla-owning taxi drivers. We're back to Elon Musk.
Well, the Tesla taxi drivers are struggling because of a boycott from passengers, and this is thought in some ways to be Elon Musk's behaviour generally, and also in relation to his support of the AFD. We are also seeing that Tesla are struggling in other ways. For example, they have had 46,000 of their Cybertrucks recalled, which kind of implies that is a pile of rubbish and a very expensive pile of rubbish at that. We've also seen that its share price has gone down by a third, but in fairness, if you do
it
compare...
It was so massively overvalued compared to every other motor company.
It's interesting because the share price probably gets treated more like a .com rather than a car company. But if you compare its share price to this time last year, it's still up a fair bit from where it was. So, but I actually think Tesla's issue is its lack of refreshing of its model line. So if you look, most of its car models are developed back in maybe almost 20 years, over 10 years ago.
You're both too young to remember how Gerard Ratner, the jeweller in the UK, destroyed his own business by describing his cheap jewellery as crap. He tried then to call it cheap and reliable at affordable prices. I wonder, has Elon Musk done incredible damage to the Tesla brand, despite the efforts of Donald Trump to boost him last week by, you know, claiming to buy a car, a full retail price? Because I think liberals in the United States and beyond are now rejecting Tesla, don't want anything to do with it. And the MAGA heads, don't like electric cars.
That's it, Matt. We did our Explainer podcast on this week, and we were saying, you know, in years to come, they'll be lecturing about how to destroy your brand, because Elon Musk looks worried now. You know, there was Trump, the car salesman extraordinaire, as you say, lining them up outside the White House, but that's not going to appeal to a Tesla buyers. And, you know, as you say, Germany is one particular example because of his support for the far-right alternative for Germany at the time. You know, that didn't go down well with German consumers, and that's where his German base is in terms of manufacturing. We are holding steady here in Ireland, but I know my own brother has bought one, and he thought he was doing the right thing for the environment.
How long ago did he buy it?
2 or 3 years now.
And he'd struggled to sell it, though, I reckon.
He's looked into it. He said, I won't be able to trade this in.
Having a sticker, please excuse me. I bought this before I realised what Elon Musk is like.
You know when you stick a sticker over a brand of a laptop when you're going travelling or whatever? He said, I'm going to try and get something to go over the T. He said, I'm just going to have to live with it. But he's got the original car. But I know that, you know, the likes of Kim Kardashian is out now doing photo shoots to try and boost sales for the other monster truck one, you know, which looks absolutely hideous.
But one of the backers for Tesla, a guy called Dan Ives, has said Musk needs to get back to run Tesla, but I just don't see that happening. He is very close to the king in an environment where corruption is normalised, and when he is part of the administration, and we're seeing that presumably there will be a whole host of defence contracts coming up and federal contracts, that he will be able to therefore win with SpaceX. Charlie Munger, who was Warren Buffett's right-hand man and business partner in Berkshire Hathaway, had a very interesting quote in relation to Musk. He said he didn't regard Musk as a good businessman. He regarded him as a successful businessman, and they're not the same thing, and they're not always the same thing. And that Musk,
that's the wisdom of Charlie Munger's nearly 100.
Charlie Munger is a genius. I think he may have passed away last 12 months. Very interesting fella.
Nearly 100, so
no, but he was very happy and very interesting and very intelligent. But one of the things that he talked about, and Musk admitted this to himself, that with both SpaceX and Tesla there was more than a 50% chance that both of those were going to go bankrupt. And Munger said they didn't, but what that told him was that Musk was a gambler, and this is now the biggest gamble that we are seeing Elon Musk have. He's gambling Tesla, he's gambling SpaceX, and he's putting it all on red, which is MAGA.
Earlier we were talking about people not being able to get into the United States. What about people leaving the country and deciding they don't want to go back, Rosie O'Donnell style?
Yeah, well, actually, Rosie O'Donnell, as many people would have heard, was mentioned in the Oval Office during Micheál Martin's visit there, and she actually is on the Late Late Show tonight. She has moved to Ireland. She's a well-known comedian and a huge critic of Trump, and always has been. Now, there was talk when Trump was elected the first time around that there'd be an outpour, you know, an overflow of celebrities trying to get out, a bit like after Brexit in the UK, you know, everyone queuing up for the Irish passport type thing. That didn't necessarily happen, and COVID came and things quietened down.
Lots of people quietly have taken out Irish passports from the UK.
I think so. Some estate agents I have heard say that there's an interest. You know, they're not saying it's an influx of American buyers to Irish properties, probably not necessarily what we need in this market, but there is an interest. And you can understand it, you know, I suppose being a celebrity, you'd have the privilege and the money behind you to be able to do that. There are hundreds of thousands and millions of people in the US who are ill at ease now and don't have that option.
Tell us about Stephen Nolan at the Belfast Cafe.
Well,
this is the BBC radio presenter.
BBC radio presenter is a show on BBC Northern Ireland as well. A Belfast Cafe posted a photograph of a mobility scooter. And within the post, they said cruel and unkind things about obese people. Stephen Nolan went down to the cafe and confronted them. And they threw him out. And then they posted more things online. And what this really strikes me, though, Matt, is it's a classic example of a cafe posting clickbait. Stephen Nolan attempting to make a show off the back of it and therefore amplifying it. Him being quite happy to get turfed out because it gives him coverage and it gives the show something to talk about. And then the cafe post again, which creates further clickbait. So for me, it's one of these horrific stories where it's working for everybody, and people at the centre of it are obese people who are probably struggling and find the entire thing very hurtful.
Yeah, and really, you know, it's not like it was an off-the-cuff remark. This is it's called Belfast Breakfast Pops, and it's in East Belfast. And on the Facebook post, you know, there was a photo of someone on a mobility scooter, and the caption read, "If you're in one of these because you're morbidly obese, please know that you are not disabled, you're fat, and probably not very useful." Now, that is just next level abusive. You know?
Well, then finish by telling me about the World Health Organization saying it didn't mean to single out Ireland and St. Patrick's Day post about alcohol issues, which I'm interested in because I was in Chicago last weekend and my God, the party going on the Saturday for St. Patrick's Day with the greeting of the river was insane.
We're practically wearing the little pins. We're so virtuous now on St. Patrick's Day, I think, compared to what we used to be like. And as you say, in the US, they really go in for it and it, you know, it's part and parcel of it. The green wigs, the leprechaun hats and away you go. But this was the World Health Organization posted on social media on St. Patrick's Day saying, you know, well, happy St. Patrick's Day, please drink responsibly, and extolling the virtues of maybe thinking twice about overdoing it. And it didn't go down well. The comments weren't too happy. And, you know, the point was it's a little bit offensive to Irish people. I think, you know, they have rowed back since then and apologised.
Yeah, they were pushing an Irish team matcha of all things, and they were telling us that there could, you know, reflect on the role of alcohol in our lives. And, you know, what it strikes is that it is a stereotype and pushing an Irish stereotype. The frustrating thing in some ways, Matt, is we buy into it and we play into it all of the time. I remember when Keir Starmer and Simon Harris met in Chequers, they were supping pints of Guinness.
That's right.
We play into it. When Barack Obama comes
Keir
here...
Keir Starmer was doing it this week at a reception for him as well, big pint of Guinness.
So it is, we embrace it in a way that feeds the stereotype, and particularly around St. Patrick's Day. So although people got fierce, hot and bothered online, it is understandable how it comes in. And the thing that none of us are willing to recognise is that alcohol actually has a significant cost to our own health, and then a cost to the health system as well.
We got to finish there. Antoine McDermott from the Communications Clinic, Laura Byrne from the Journal.ie. Thank you both so much.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.